This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Mike Murphy hosts Jane and Henry Stover, who will be discussing a response to their Freedom of Information request as pertains to the Bannister Federal Complex. But first, I'm Natural Lee with your headline news. WIBW.com reports, a Kansas House panel is planning to debate a bill that would freeze renewable energy mandates for utility companies. The House Energy and Environment Committee scheduled a vote on the measure for Wednesday. Current Kansas law requires that 10% of the electricity provided by utility companies come from renewable energy sources. That mandate is set to rise to 15% in 2016 and 20% in 2020. But the bill would eliminate those future requirements. The Kansas Chamber of Commerce and conservative think tanks support the measure and have said the government should not set such mandates on businesses. The Kansas Farm Bureau and renewable energy groups oppose the proposal, arguing it would remove an incentive for companies to invest further in renewable sources. OrganicConsumers.org reports, lawmakers from both parties joined with concerned citizens and representatives from several nonprofits at the Maine State House on March 19th to roll out a landmark initiative that would place Maine at the forefront of the food safety movement. LD 991 would require foods distributed in Maine to include a label if genetically modified organisms were used to produce the final product. In 2013, Maine legislators passed a law that would require labeling for foods that contain genetically modified organisms, but only if five contiguous states passed a similar requirement first. This effectively allows Maine to be held hostage on this issue until New Hampshire decides to pass a similar law. Legislators from all four caucuses have joined forces in sponsoring this recent initiative that is part of a growing national movement towards a more cognitive approach to healthy food practices. And finally, the NewYorkTimes.com reports, the Obama administration on Friday unveiled the nation's first major federal regulations on hydraulic fracturing, a technique for oil and gas drilling that has led to a significant increase in American energy production, but also has raised concerns about health and safety risks. The regulations, which are to take effect in 90 days, will allow government workers to inspect and validate the safety and integrity of the concrete barriers that line fracking wells. They will require companies to publicly disclose the chemicals used in the fracturing process within 30 days of completing fracking operations using an industry-run website called Frack Focus. Environmentalists take issue with the decision to rely on a site created by and for the fracking industry. The rules will also set safety standards for how companies can store used fracking chemicals around well sites and will require companies to submit detailed information on well geology to the Bureau of Land Management, a part of the Interior Department. Oil and gas companies have resisted fracking regulations, fearing that they could raise the cost of fracking and slow or freeze energy development. The Independent Petroleum Association of America immediately filed a lawsuit challenging the regulations, calling it, quote, a reaction to unsubstantiated concerns, end quote, and requesting that the regulations be set aside. The new regulations are expected to be the first in a series of rules governing fracking safety. The Obama administration is expected to issue rules designed to curb the release of methane, a greenhouse gas, from fracking wells. I would now like to invite Jane and Henry Stover to the microphones. Welcome to our show tonight on Eco Radio.
Thank you for letting us be part of your show.
Thank you so much.
Aaron, we're delighted to be here.
Yeah, all right. So Jane and Henry have been on this station many times in different capacities over the years. And most notably, they're considered, when people think of the Stovers, they think of Peaceworks. And when people think of Peaceworks, they think of the Stovers. And we're going to talk a little bit, or we're going to talk some later about a Freedom of Information Act request that was submitted and replied to, and we have some of the response regarding the Bannister Federal Complex. But before we get to that, I do want to talk a little bit about Peaceworks. And you had your annual meeting yesterday, And
Michael, our bylaws require that we have a annual meeting. It was a beautiful day. It was a day in which KU basketball team and the Wichita State Shockers played at 4:15. So we thought, oh my God, a lot of people will not show up. It's too beautiful a day to be inside. However, we had almost 70 persons there. And we had people from the Green Party, people from the Sierra Club, All Souls, AFSC, Quakers, Catholic Worker members, just a wide variety of people. And so it was really a great way to kind of, you know, just get together. And also Citizens for Justice in the Middle East were present, in addition to those, you know, board members and those that come out for other peace activities.
And so you guys, I guess, you know, this is when you elect or appoint board members at this meeting?
That's correct. So people, you know, are up for office and for board positions, and some persons are electing to retire, and we have some new persons that are coming. And a person that was there said, I would like to consider being part of your board. And so I told this person, Peg, why don't you come to our next board meeting to see, you know, what we do at the board meetings and how you feel about us then. So
And so in addition to all this, you had some entertainment going on.
We did. And you want to talk about it, Jay?
Well, we did have fabulous entertainment. We had a whole reader's theater that Ron Faust put together. Ron Faust, a disciple of Christ Minister, and heavy into the Disciples Peace Fellowship, and heavy into AFSC. He's been a peace worker for ages. And so he took some stories that I had written about some of the recent trials that we've had.
Wait, explain that, trials we've had.
Oh, well, this is, yeah, that's kind of a leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Since about 2010, some of us in PeaceWorks have been doing civil resistance, and we just block entrances, or we step across a line that the authorities have decided we should not step across. And we usually let the authorities know in advance that we will be visiting. And we keep things posted on our website, peaceworkskc.org. We send out news releases. We let people know we're going to have gatherings. And we also at least sometimes say if we know that people are going to do civil resistance. Now,
civil resistance where?
Oh, okay. Civil resistance at Bannister Federal Complex, the former home to the Kansas City plant, which makes non-nuclear parts for nuclear weapons. It makes 85% of any nuclear weapon that the U.S. makes and sells some to England. They're happy to make money. And that has now shifted way far south, south of Grandview, but still in KC Mo, out at Botts Road and Missouri Highway 150. And so we've done civil resistance there. We've also done civil resistance at Whiteman Air Force Base, which is located real close to Nob Noster. And our listeners may already know that there's about 40 Air Force bases in this country where people sit at monitors and by remote control direct drones to drop bombs in various countries. It could be Afghanistan, Iraq,
Pakistan
has been a big one. So Pakistan supposedly one of our friends. We drop bombs on people in Pakistan.
So with regards to the weapons plant, I mean it's not just a few people.
We have had 120 arrests concerning trespass, and everything is peaceful. Nobody brings a weapon. People bring a photo ID, so we're not delaying the whole process. It is kind of, the police call me. I'm Henry Stover. Call me in advance. Say, Henry, I understand an event is going on. And is that correct? Are you still scheduled? And we do have an event upcoming, a Memorial Day die-in. There's going to be a 10-mile walk in advance from the old plant to the new plant. And then we are going to have people, you know, go to the ground. And as far, people will be on the public right of way. I don't know yet. There may be some people that will choose to be on the public, on the private part. And then they're risking arrest. And so it's really up to the security guard to say arrest them or not arrest them. But so far, anyone that they claim has stepped over a particular line has been arrested and received a charge at the Kansas City Municipal Court level.
And so Ron Faust and took Jane's stories and synthesized them into a little skit.
A reader's theater
about some of these recent court cases. And so one of the people that performed in that skit is our colleague here at Eco Radio, Richard Mabian. Is that right?
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Richard was the magnificent judge. And so the people we did not plan for any line crossing to occur. We knew we were going to go visit Whiteman Air Force Base and have a demonstration against the drone warfare that is done by remote control by people sitting at monitors at Whiteman Air Force Base. We knew we were going to have this demonstration. We wanted to attract people. We had about 60 people. Many of us were on a bus. There were some people that came by car. And so we went to Whiteman Air Force Base on June 1st. Two nights before that, we were having like a three-day weekend focused on resistance and on telling the truth to the American public. And so two nights before that, one person who was visiting and was part of our weekend, Kathy Kelly, said that she was seriously considering crossing the line at Whiteman Air Force Base. That was a shock to us planners, but a welcome shock. We want Kathy to do whatever she feels called to do. And then Georgia Walker from Kansas City area, the head of Journey to New Life, Georgia Walker said that she would join Kathy, so we would have two. We always like to have more than one. And so they indeed did some resistance, but most of us were just on the public area where we were told that it was, you know, perfectly acceptable for us to be. The public can all be there. And so we were there as resistors, and then finally Kathy and Georgia stepped across the line. That was June 1st. We had the trial December 10th in Jefferson City. And the question has been asked, why not in Kansas City? Well, we could very likely get quite a crowd to come to a Kansas City federal trial. And what Henry was saying has been through municipal court has been the situations of line crossings either at Bannister Federal Complex or at the new nuclear weapons parts plant that's conveniently called National Security Campus. And the signs For you can't go any faster than 10 miles or 20 miles an hour, those are campus speed limit signs. They're calling themselves an education center for security. They don't even have the word nuclear in the main short name that they're now calling the place.
Wow. Michael, for the listeners, Kathy Kelly's an international figure, and she's traveled many times abroad to Lebanon and to Gaza and to Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Guatemala, and so forth. She's three times been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And she ends up staying with the people, the victims of war. And she has a group of young persons that are interested in nonviolence and working on the problems of Afghanistan. And so, you know, she wants to appeal. I mean, when you come back, you can, you know, be on KKFI and other places. But she also wants to appeal to the branches of our government, the U.S. attorneys that prosecute cases, the federal judges. This was in federal court in Jefferson City. So to try to touch, you know, as many people. And again, the issue is like risk arrest. And both of them were carrying a loaf of bread and also a petition that stated, you know, their grievances, kind of like our Declaration of Independence, of our grievances with, you know, the British government, which was really like an indictment because so many civilians, non-combatants, have been killed in those countries. And I think the figure I know of is maybe several thousand non-combatants. And so somebody says, oh, ISIS does some terrible things. They have killed, you know, 100 or 200 people. And then the other side of it is, but our drones have killed several thousand people. Aren't they both equally wrong? And shouldn't we both be raising our voices?
Okay. So we're talking to Jane and Henry Stolber here from Peaceworks. And they were just, well, I thought we were talking about the annual meeting
We drifted a little
but,
bit.
But and so there was this skit, a Reader's Theater thing, KKFI's Richard Mabian was part of it, and many other community activists took part in this. Can we see this on YouTube or something? I'm curious.
I'll tell you, Mike Nichols from KKFI taped it.
Okay.
And one of the key lines that Kathy had in the Reader's Theater was, "We have a right to claim our right not to kill."
Right. That's great. So the other big thing at the annual meeting, well, at least from my perspective, was PeaceWorks gives out an annual award. Called the...
We have two annual awards. Okay. Charles Bebb was a member of PeaceWorks, one of the founding members. And then more recently, Chris and Lynn Cheatham have both passed away. So we have a Cheatham Community Peace Award. And for those of you that maybe remember, and I get questions, what is the name of that elderly couple that you would see everywhere? You would see them, you know, at the library. You would see them, you know, at all these public events. Well, Chris was a social worker, and Lynn had worked at the Kansas City Star. They were both members of All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. And so they became like synonymous with, you know, peace works and all these, you know, good works. And so this year we had like a group of 14 organizations, all good organizations. And we went through this winnowing process and we said, well, who has a lot of influence in the community that maybe is not properly recognized? So we all made the decision that KKFI Public Affairs should receive the Cheatham Community Peace Award this year. And it was just delightful because Sharon Lockhart was there, and Amy, who assists Sharon, was there, and C.B. Richardson, and
M.C.
or M.C. Richardson, and a number of other persons
and
were
Richard
there.
Mabian.
And Richard Mabian,
Richard
of course,
Mabian,
too.
Mike Nichols.
And
so,
yes.
You mentioned Lynn and Chris Cheatham.
That's right.
And so we have some audio of them. Back a few years ago when we were doing these things called Community Voices, we have Lynn and Chris speaking about PeaceWorks.
PeaceWorks Kansas City began in 1982 as the Nuclear Freeze Committee of the Kansas City Interfaith Peace Alliance. PeaceWorks promotes citizen lobbying by letter, email, and personal visits to senators and representatives and their staffers. Our monthly newsletter keeps members aware of legislative action, which invites our response. We mail issues cards to inform our members and to urge them to make phone calls to Washington.
We continue to oppose national missile defense as a waste of taxpayer money that does not defend us against real threats such as the September 11th attacks. You can contact PeaceWorks, have an office at 4509 Walnut in Kansas City. Our phone number is 816-561-1181. The email is peaceworkskc@earthlink.net. And this is Chris and Lynn Cheatham for Community Voices, a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Wow. A little bit from Lynn and Chris Cheatham there. Great to hear those voices.
Yes, they were really the heart and soul of PeaceWorks. They would go every day to the office, and no one on the board receives payment for the work. And so all this was just volunteer work because they truly believed that peace is the way, and we need to work toward peace. So,
and concerning this Cheatham Community Peace Award, Tamara made a very good point. Tamara Summerins on our board.
Mm-hmm.
And after Henry gave this beautiful statement about how important KKFI is in the community for bringing many issues forth, then Tamara said, I just want to add a personal note. I want to make this personal from PeaceWorks. KKFI gives us a voice in the community. You have us on many of your programs. You know, we get Sharon Lockhart calls us about Every Woman. Eco Radio,
Tell Somebody,
and Tell Somebody,
Radioactive
Tom
Magazine,
Clamor, Radioactive Magazine with Mike Nichols, you know, and Tamara was saying, KKFI covers us ad nauseum.
Yeah.
And we just love it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. Well, you know, on behalf of KKFI, thank you very much for that recognition. That certainly means a lot to us, and it's good to know that we're being noticed.
Michael, the BAB Award winners were Dee Barry and Ben Chelsis. Oh. And for many years, they headed up the Green Party, at least in Kansas City. They were very ecology-minded, and you would see them in many, many places. And I think they're both like in their 90s, and they were not expecting to receive the award because, again, we had, I think, about 14 names that we were dealing with as to who should we honor. But they have tried to connect nationally about, you know, green issues. And so we wanted to recognize them in a special way.
That's great. When we come back, we're going to take a break. We're going to hear a couple of spots and plus Current Cast, one of our little environmental modules. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about this Freedom of Information Act request. And then we'll also open up the phone lines. If you're interested in calling in, being part of this discussion about Peaceworks, about the Bannister Federal Complex and the cleanup thereof or lack of cleanup, the number to call is 816-931-5534. We'd love to include you in on the conversation. But first, this.
Support for KKFI provided by KC Fringe, presenting White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, a unique theater experience that involves 15 courageous performers such as Crosby Kemper, Forrest Attaway, Heidi Vann, and a dozen more, each performing 15 different scripts on 15 evenings, March 5th through 9th, 12th through 16th, and 26th through 30th, at the City Stage in Union Station. Each performer will see the script for the first time when they arrive on stage to present the script before a live audience. Details and ticket information at kcfringe.org.
If your unemployment benefits have been denied in the last 30 days, you may be eligible for free legal assistance from attorneys and law students through the UMKC School of Law Unemployment Benefits Clinic. To find out if you are eligible for these free legal services, your unemployment benefits must have been denied in the last 30 days. Contact the clinic today and talk to an attorney about your case free of charge. Call 816-235-5129. Again, call 816-235-5129.
Let's toast to more sustainable beer brewing on this Current Cast. Ever been told that if you want to save water, drink ale instead? Unfortunately, there's not much truth to the joke. A lot of water goes into making beer.
It can vary from about 3 liters to 6 liters of water per liter of finished product produced.
That's Todd Christensen, director of the Beverage Industry Environmental Roundtable. He says water is used during the brewing process as well as for cleaning and cooling. But there's change brewing. Christensen says by fixing leaks, recycling water used for cooling, and optimizing their cleaning methods, beer makers in the Environmental Roundtable have increased their efficiency by 15% in 3 years. Now I'll raise a glass to that. Support for Current Cast comes from the Mitsubishi Corporation Foundation for the Americas. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
And we're back here at Eco Radio KC. My name is Mike Murphy. And I'm here with Jane and Henry Stover from Peaceworks. And we've been talking a little bit about Peaceworks in general terms. And we talked a little bit about their rap sheet, getting arrested quite often with regards to both the Whiteman Air Force Base drone operations, but also the Bannister complex, both the old and new weapons plant here in Kansas City. And so back on December 4th, Ann Solentrop, who's with Peaceworks and Physicians for Social Responsibility, sent a letter, Freedom of Information Act request, for a couple of records. One was a description of current conditions of the Kansas City plant and Bannister Federal Complex, and two, the work plan for the environmental and engineering evaluation of the Bannister Federal Complex by the public-private partnership of NNSA and CenterPoint Properties. The site analysis and environmental review was announced by the NNSA in a media release on November 12th. They received their request, and just this week we have a response. And so they include this statement of work for the Bannister Federal Complex.
Michael, the response was 3 days ago, but I want to point out Ann Submit, who is a member on the board of Peaceworks, submitted this request December the 4th, 2014. So it was 3.5 months ago that they sent a response. They attached a 12-page document that says Statement of Work for the Bannister Federal Complex. And that statement of work is really dated September 24th, 2014. So it's not even current. Mm. And when you read through the 12 pages, it is all very general. And the purpose of, you know, this statement of work is to see how much, you know, is needed. And this is in regard to the demolition and remediation planning in regard to the plant, the old plant that in World War II was used with Navy jet pilot planes, and then later on became a nuclear plant facility in 1949. And all of these years, we have, you know, this operation going on where toxic materials was put into barrels and was then buried. And there were 200 wells out there to monitor what all chemicals were going down into the ground, because there is a creek across the street. But anyway,
and the Blue River.
Yes, the Blue River.
The Indian Creek across the street and the Blue River alongside.
So we have a process here that CenterPoint won the award to handle this thing. And this document here is Statement of Work for the BFA, Bannister Federal Complex, Transfer Agreement Development. And what they are wanting to do is they're going to have a study, and the center point will then, you know, say, yes, we can handle the job. But this agreement also allows them to get out of the work. And we are concerned that the cleanup will be of a more minimal character than really what needs to be done, because the public lives across the street. The public lives. There was a daycare center. There's a medical facility just down the road, north from this place. They are trying to remediate this property so that it can be used for other ways, which would mean workers being there. And we're afraid that this would just simply be a cover-up. And in this 12-page document, they do refer to a deed that would be transfer, and they do talk about the chemicals connected with the site. And you know, again, it's things that Peaceworks has raised in the past, but they stated in their document it's not something that Peaceworks is putting forward. But on page 2 of 12 pages, the second paragraph down, petroleum compounds, volatile organic compounds, polychlorinate, biphenyls, which is PCBs, asbestos, ACM, which I don't know, beryllium, lead-based paints. Then in addition, other chemicals and conditions of concern may exist and require additional assessment. And then they say, they talk about radioactive materials, metals, and these things. And this is very serious business, because some of these toxic chemicals exist for hundreds and hundreds of years. And what we, since they have not been open, have not been candid, and I went to the cover letter, I went to a website for Honeywell, Com, Sites, ERO, KCP, Kansas City Plant, and that gives you some information from 2013. But we are in 2015, and we would like the persons, all the public, especially the eco-minded, the environmentally concerned persons, to call Governor Jay Nixon. And his phone number is 573 751-3222. He is the one that will have to sign off on the deed, which will then transfer the ownership of the property, because these are still studies going on. And I do not think that they are coming clean. They are not being diligent. They're not being open with, you know, all the materials. I am afraid that some things will be dug up. Other things will simply be covered up. In the past, they put asphalt over toxic chemicals. This plant on the website had, I believe it was like 900 toxic chemicals. This was their own material. This was not a peace group, you know, thing. This was from, you know, the Kansas City plant.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's
great. The federal plant. And so we are asking the governor to please do not convey this property, because I tell you, on page 3 of this document, they state in 2.1, early transfer and cooperative cleanup. And when you say early transfer, that means they have not done the work. And when you leave it open like that, well, when will they get to it? This plan has existed so many years, and this is kind of like an open book, open check or whatever. Will the cleanup take place in 10, 20 years or so? And, you know, since the residents live nearby and since people will be working there, we are truly asking that this be at the residential standard, not just, you know, some dump site standard. We don't want it to necessarily be at, you know, some other level that would be really too low, especially when they use the words radioactive substances.
There's a point I want to make here, though, and you did say it, so I just really, I guess, want to stress the point.
Please.
Like, when you talk about radioactive materials, PCBs, asbestos, beryllium, lead-based paint, polyaromatic hydrocarbons, heavy metals, this is not, you know, some conspiracy that PeaceWorks has cooked up. This is from federal. This is from the Department of Energy's. That this is what they sent you,
yes,
in response.
Yes, this, it
says right in there.
Yes, and
so there are. Well, I hear what you're saying about cover-ups. You know, what they are letting out does, you know, does spell it out. I mean, this is not, I mean, it's here, right? I'm looking at it right here in black and white.
Right. You can also find on the website the images of the plumes underneath Bannister Federal Complex. And we know from the documentation that NBC News did locally, they found 154 people whose families said that they had died from contaminants there. And these were not only the people who worked in the Kansas City plant, which made the non-nuclear parts for nuclear weapons. These are also from those in the broader Bannister Federal Complex, many of them working for the military, working for the General Services Administration, keeping records for Marines, Commerce Department, Agricultural Department, IRS. We all know in this city that this had a huge impact on people. And in that NBC list, not only were there 154 persons whose families had said they had died, but there were 250 other families that said that their family members were ill from contaminants out there. And we want a thorough cleanup that will truly protect the people to the residential level, not just the business level or the toxic dump site level.
Mm. So one other thing I wanted to like kind of draw out a little bit. So the company charged with cleaning the site is CenterPoint.
Yes.
So, and it's part of a transfer of deed. So will they take over ownership or?
Yes, they will. But in this document, this agreement, it also states if there's other things found on the property, they can back out of it. And so we don't know where the process is. In order to be fair, this afternoon then, I called up the Missouri Natural Resources Department, and they are the department that, you know, deals with environmental ecological issues. and I called a man by the name of Raymond Franson, F-R-A-N-S-O-N, and he's involved with hazardous waste and the federal cleanup of property. And I left my message. I've met with him personally in the past. I did not hear back today. I hope to hear back from him.
Well, keep us posted on that.
But if people would like to know more about this issue, my cell phone number is 913-375-0045. 913-375-0045. I would like to share whatever information that I learned with the Eco Radio program, with KKFI. And Mr. Franson's telephone number, he's located out in Lee Summit. His number is 816-251-0700. But I think that we need to contact Governor Jay Nixon to say no full disclosure has been made. We don't know the truth about this. And they want to do this early transfer. And we are saying, you know, the only someone that has something to hide wants to do something as quick as possible and get away with it.
All right. So as far as CenterPoint, they this is not their only involvement in this whole thing.
No.
Could you maybe go a little bit into what their involvement on the other end of the spectrum is?
They were first involved with the Zimmer Real Estate Company locally here, and they have built the new weapons plant, which is at 145th and Botts Road, just on the other side of Grandview. And this plant is, I think it costs like $670 million, and each year it will cost $90 million in expenses. Some of it dealing with, you know, the financing part for the personnel that works out there. So they are involved, you know, on a big time basis in, you know, nuclear weapons. And they are also, I misstated. It is $900 million per year that is the cost of this plant. And so, you know, when I spoke with the attorney from Chicago, they're headquartered in Chicago, and he said, we have done some other remediation work or whatever. And I said to him, but the government study says it will cost $670 million or so. And he said, oh, Henry, we can do it like for much cheaper. And I'm saying, well, this is a government study. Where are you going to cut corners or whatever? So, again, that draws suspicion. So my wife, Jane, here says that maybe it's really $90 million per year. But still, that's a lot of money. Mm. And when this plant, you know, is running decades and you multiply that by $90 million, there's a lot of money involved in the weapons, you know, field, the industry.
Oh, yeah. I bet. So I'm just skimming through some of this stuff. Permits expect to be canceled prior to real estate transfer. Installation of 4 solvent spray booths. Installation of new cross draft spray booth. Polyamic reactor. Ethanol spray booth. There's all sorts of like. Kind of like if these were ingredients in my food, I wouldn't buy it, right?
That's
so
right.
So there's a lot of, you know, these polysyllabic words in here of kind of dangerous chemicals that we're talking about.
Yes.
Are right in Bannister Road and Lydia, which is right by Troost, mm-hmm. is where the old plant is that may or may not be cleaned up.
Yes. You know, the deception is they were talking about the gold standard and building this building. And yes, you. The new building. And yes, you can build it. But once you end up using these materials and things, it no longer is the gold standard.
Right, right.
Because of the milling that goes on in making these products. And this letter came from the National Nuclear Security Administration. It did not come from Kansas City, but it came from Albuquerque, New Mexico, which, again, you know, is involved with all of the, you know, the World War II
types
of things. And they say, this is our final response. Well, this is their only response, but we cannot allow this to be a final response because they have not made full disclosure that the public deserves.
Okay. If anyone would like to join in on the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-5534. We're talking to Jane and Henry Stover from Peaceworks. We're discussing the Bannister weapons plant, the old weapons plant, and this upgrading of to a new weapons plant that's taking place 8 miles south of the existing one, yet still within the Kansas City limits. And so while we're on the subject of the weapons plant, and which is owned, the old plant is owned and operated by Honeywell, is that correct?
You know,
or operated by.
Yes, that's
they're
right.
The proprietors.
They were not the owners of the property,
right.
But they were the operators, and they are the operators of the new weapons plant.
Okay, and so Honeywell's CEO, is it, is being, I think we have a caller, is being...
Honeywell's CEO, who is Chris Gentile, Honeywell FMT, Honeywell Federal Manufacturing and Technologies, is going to be honored by a department of Rockhurst University. And Mr. Gentile, he's a graduate of Rockhurst. That's where he got his MBA. That was, you know, past history. But he has presented himself as being highly excellent in managing people. And so he's getting an award for leadership and ethics. We can grant the leadership. Yeah. They were able to transfer from the old plant to the new plant ahead of schedule, which does not always happen.
Right.
We are questioning the ethics of having plants not only that create weapons of help create weapons of mass destruction, because without the 85% of all of these bolts and wiring and radar devices, et cetera, that our people here in Kansas City make, there would be no nuclear weapons.
I want to read you a response from Maurice Copeland, who is a former weapons plant employee who worked there for many, many years, both on the line and in management. And so Maurice poses a question, and caller, I'll be getting to you in just a second. Does Rockhurst know that Chris Gentile personally is withholding evidence of claimants that have been filed, that have filed for medical benefits under the EEOICPA, which I don't know what that is, but I think it involves...
Energy Employees Occupational Illness Compensation Program Act, EEOICPA.
And so Maurice is averring that that Chris Gentile is withholding radiation exposure information on employees of the federal weapons complex. And very interesting stuff. We do have a caller. Call, you're on the line. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Dave Beebe, friend of Mike Murphy. Hey, you know, this whole thing about them cleaning up the old plant is just a joke, too, because that's just magic they're talking about. You can't clean it up. You just need to dig a big hole somewhere, probably right next to it, line it with several layers of real heavy rubber, and then carefully put it in that hole and cover it up and not touch it for about, probably 100,000 years. But so, you know, and CenterPoint's already made enough money off this situation. We should not, as citizens, let them make more money off the situation, you know. That's Michael. Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Yeah, Mr. Beebe, the thing is, you can't just cover this up. They have recognized with the 200 wells that they monitor these chemicals that go down, down, down. And when you have the Blue River nearby and you have the Tomahawk?
It's the Indian Creek.
Indian Creek next door. They realize that they have to pump some of that stuff out and treat it or the best that they can. But again, these are terrible toxins. And so, I mean, the true answer is for us to recognize ethically that these are chemicals and stuff that we have to say we will no longer produce. Mm. And if we are going to live as a people then we have to say, you know, no, this has to end. And the shocking part is that Rockhurst is a Catholic school, and it's run by the Jesuits. And these Jesuits really are Society of Jesus members. And for it to be part of ethics, somewhere something has gone wrong. And there are a group of us that are trying to meet with one of the deans of the school. And the second thing is we want to ask, what would Jesus do? Is this really something that is compatible with the message of Jesus to love your enemies, love your neighbor? And they are going to honor Mr. Gentile on April the 19th. Or the 9th, I'm sorry, April the 9th. And this is at the Roastery Bean Hanger Facility Event Space. And the address is 1204 West 27th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. So if you're on Southwest Boulevard from Main Street and you go west, it angles. And on the left-hand side, you will see this warplane. That is hanging up in the air, and they do have event space, and there will be a group of us that will be out there with signs, and it will be totally nonviolent. But to let us know is that can we possibly be hearing right? What was Rockhurst thinking when they made, you know, this choice? Because somehow they didn't teach their principles very well.
So April 9th, what time?
This, let's see, are we going to be there from 5 to 6?
Okay.
What?
5 to 6:30.
Oh, 5 to 6:30. And so the guests will be coming about, you know, that during that time period.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we'll be back in a little bit. We've got to take another break, and we'll be back with the Stovers and wrap up the program. We could probably fit one more call in if you're quick, 816-931-5534. Be back after this.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. You're not the only one who resolved to lose weight in 2015. One of America's most iconic pickup trucks, the Ford F-150, also went on a diet, dropping hundreds of pounds to improve fuel economy and reduce carbon pollution. Driving the change are new federal fuel efficiency standards, which call for light-duty vehicles to average at least 54.5 miles per gallon by the year 2025. So to get a jump start, Ford gave the F-150 a makeover. With a military-grade aluminum alloy body, the 2015 model can weigh 700 pounds less than last year's steel truck and is up to 20% more fuel efficient. It's light, but Ford says it's just as tough. That's important to Tim Kingsbury, the first person to buy one of the redesigned trucks.
Well, I will drive it to football games in Lubbock, Texas, and that's about a 6.5-hour drive either way, and you can run into some wildlife on the highway there, and so I feel very secure in my truck because I know that it can handle anything that I might run into.
By putting the F-150 on the road to sustainability, Ford is showing consumers that you don't need to sacrifice toughness to care for the Earth. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Want to acknowledge that the people we listen to have a depth of knowledge in the community, have been working for many years, sometimes most of their working lives in service to the community, and so the quality of the information that we received and the insight that they provided is invaluable.
Hear the release of the American Friends Service Committee's report on their Move the Money listening project on the forum Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Pair Excellence 2. Crossroads Pollination continues our series of dining experiences produced by 90.1 FM, pairing four courses of Collections American Cuisine coupled with four of Torn Label Brewing Company's eclectic beers. Thursday, April 2nd at Collection, 1532 Grand Boulevard. First course and the music of Mistura Fina served at 7 p.m. Chef Selena Teo and head brewer Rafi Chowdhury will be on hand to illuminate the pairings. Full menu and tickets at kkfi.org/events. Cheers.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system, brought to you as a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI. Again, the following is only a test of the emergency alert system. What you just heard was a test from the emergency alert system. It was only a test. In the event of an emergency, it would have been followed with further instructions. Thank you for your patience. From 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City.
And we're back here on Eco Radio KC. We just got a few minutes left. We'll be hearing our upcoming calendar of events and also this week in water. But we want to wrap up here with the Stovers. And so what haven't we gotten out yet?
Well, this will be the fourth year for the Memorial Day Walk. It's from the old Kansas City plant at Troost and Bannister, and it will go primarily west to Holmes. Then we take Holmes all the way out to Highway 150, and then we go east on Highway 150 and then round the corner to the entrance of the new Kansas City Nuclear Weapons Parts Plant. It is a 10-mile walk. A few people, walk the entire way. There will also be vehicles along so that you can walk and ride. Some people have joined us at the beginning and then join us at the end. But we have this treaty back in 1968, this Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty that our president signed. The Senate ratified it. And yet, in contradiction, we continue to make nuclear weapons, the guidance system, the parts, the interior and the exterior. We make the gun for the weapon, and then another facility puts the nuclear bullet into it. So we end up asking, 189 countries have signed this NPT treaty. Why are we making more weapons? Well, and at the same time, we can be providing much better health, much better education, so many things we could be doing with these resources. And we're going to be doing a die-in. We're kind of like the 60s people when you did a sit-in, like, the Selma, from the movies and so forth. Well, people are going to do a die-in at the new plant out there. And some, probably most, will be on the public right-of-way. And perhaps there'll be some that will do it on the private property and risk arrest. But we think it's fitting because this is Memorial Day. We do not only just remember soldiers, but we have to speak out and say, why? Why is this going on again and again? We've had abysmal failure. Military solutions do not work. CIA yes. John Brennan said that ISIS, ISIL will not be solved by military means. Mm-hmm. And we know that Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan are not going to be solved by military solutions.
Okay, so as we wrap up, the response to the Freedom of Information, the FOIA request, you guys will have it posted on peaceworkskc.org in the next week. But if someone was dying to get their hands on this, they could call you.
Yes, and please call me. My cell phone number is 913-375-0045. And in addition to calling me, please call Governor Jay Nixon at 573-751-3222 and ask him, do not sign a transfer of property at the old weapons plant because we have not seen, we do not know, if there is going to be, what type of cleanup there will be, whether it will just be a cover-up or whether we're pushing for the absolute maximum cleanup.
Okay, great. And Jane and Henry Stover, thank you so much for being here. And again, big thanks to Peaceworks for their special recognition of KKFI with the Cheatham Award. That means a lot to us. And now here's your calendar of events. The Missouri Rural Crisis Center is having a Family Farms and Democracy Day on March 31st at 11 a.m. at the Capitol Building in Jefferson City, 201 West Capitol Avenue. Project Blue River Rescue, March 28th. Volunteers of all ages and abilities are needed to clean up the Blue River. Dedicated sites are available for groups. T-shirts, work gloves, tools, and trash bags will be provided. And the volunteer event will be held on Saturday, March 28th from 8 a.m. to noon at the Lakeside Nature Center. You can find out more by calling 513-8960 or check out lakesidenaturecenter.org. And the Meet Local, Eat Local and Organic Expo happens this coming Saturday from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's put on by the Kansas City Food Circle, and it's an annual event and a great way for eaters to get together with growers and find out about how, just find out how your food families are welcome. And this will be at Johnson County Community College this coming Saturday, and then on April 11th they'll do it at Penn Valley Community College. And then the 14th annual Prairie Village Earth Fair happens on March 28th, that same day, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The 14th annual Prairie Village Earth Fair theme is Enlighten Your Footprint Because the Earth Matters. The annual Earth Fair features many exhibits, vendors, and activities to inspire Earth action and much more. So that's at Shawnee Mission East Gymnasium this Saturday from 10 to 3. You can find out more at earth-fair.org.
It's not all bad news on World Water Day 2015. That and other stories for the week ending March 22nd.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
We start off this week noting World Water Day and mentioning a dire United Nations report called Water for a Sustainable World. The report concludes that the Earth will have only 60% of the water it needs if we continue on our current trajectory.
The report states that about 750 million people are still without access to drinking water, and those most affected are the poor and women.
The UN said that a relatively small investment in sanitation services would result in substantial economic gains.
The largest demand for water will come from manufacturing, which will increase its needs by a whopping 400% in the years from 2000 to 2050. The UN is also calling on the agricultural sector to greatly increase its water efficiency.
The UN report was released in New Delhi, India, a country where some aquifers are being depleted at the world's fastest rates, and the shortfall between supply and demand for water has been forecast at 50% or even higher.
But there's also good news from India. Last week, it was announced that the winner of the award known as the Nobel Prize for Water is an Indian who has brought water to no less than 1,000 villages.
The annual award is made by the Stockholm International Water Institute, and this year's winner, Rajendra Singh, is known for helping to build traditional earthen dams, or johads.
The dams hold back the flow of water in the wet season and allow it to seep into the ground for future use. These traditional methods fell out of use during the British colonial rule.
Due to Mr. Singh's work, the Stockholm Institute noted that water is flowing again in several rivers of Rajasthan, and the forest cover has increased, leading to the return of antelope and leopards.
Some women in Kenya are constructing water storage systems of their own to deal with shortages.
They are using a form of reservoirs that are called pans. A water pan is about 20 yards across and is constructed by digging a dam and lining it. Water from heavy rain runoffs is stored and can provide up to 4 months' needs until the next rainy season.
The stored water is then used to grow tomatoes, watermelons, sugarcane, and other crops for sale. And with the earned money, women are providing for their families.
As long as it rains, then the pans can work to store water. However, there have been accounts of pans not filling due to lack of precipitation. Still, with adequate rainfall, the pans can relieve Kenyan women from having to wake up as early as 4 a.m. to trek along difficult terrain to collect water in pots, pails, and cans.
And more good news, and one of the most exciting developments for oceans in some time, last week the United Kingdom announced the establishment of the world's largest marine protected area.
The new Pitcairn Islands Reserve in the South Pacific will protect more than 300,000 square miles of open ocean. Pitcairn, if the name sounds familiar, is home to the descendants of the HMS Bounty mutineers, who sought refuge on the island to hide from the Royal Navy.
Just as Pitcairn was a safe haven for sailors, it's now to be a sanctuary for marine life. The islands are some of the most remote on Earth, and therefore have near pristine ecosystems.
The waters contain coral reefs with abundant sharks and large fishes, submerged mountains, and deep sea habitats that might contain species not yet known by science.
Speaking of species not yet known to science, finally this week, meet Pecoltia gridoi, a newly named species of suckermouth armored catfish.
And if its name calls to mind a galaxy far, far away, you're on the right track. The fish was named for Greedo, the bounty hunter killed by Han Solo in Star Wars: A New Hope.
For Jonathan Armbruster and his colleagues at Auburn University, the resemblance between the previously unknown catfish, with its dark eyes, sucker mouth, and facial bristles, and the cute Greedo, was unmistakable.
This name is not the first for a Star Wars character, however. In 2012, a reddish-purple worm was found in the Atlantic Ocean that had large, floppy lips on either side of its head. Its full scientific name? Yoda purpurata. For Yoda, of course.
Although taxonomists seem to have fun naming their species, they'll tell you that describing living organisms, everything from bacteria to whales, is essential for studying biodiversity, protecting species, tracking infectious disease, and understanding the history of life on our planet.
May the Force be with them.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.